It's Wednesday, March 23rd, 2011, and you're listening to episode 226 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. The running time for this episode is until the slot ends. And for those of you at home who are completely stupid, this is the live recording from Fear the Con 4.
That was one of the most amazing f***ing things I've ever seen in my entire life.
I'm sorry, I'll move my pants away. So I want to thank all of you here for coming out, all of you guys at home for tuning in. And we only have one announcement before we get down the show. We haven't done introductions yet. I'm so important.
No, we didn't.
Oh, my name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wade.
I told you, this is Pat. I don't have a mic.
Because you don't know until 225. You didn't know what to do with them.
And this is Chris.
And this is John.
Okay, now I have one announcement. I have already
Wait.
Learned. What? God.
This is another announcement, and this is...
Everybody! That doesn't seem fair to the people at home. Instead, I want you guys to all give me your names. So, and joining us today as our guest host is...
And Zeke!
Smartest man in the room.
Yeah!
Now, can I do an announcement?
If you bust.
Yes.
Okay. I do have an announcement, which is looking forward to Fear the Con 5. Churcher is running Traveler. So... So be sure to block out every weekend in March since we haven't picked a date yet. And we will have Churcher Running Traveler every weekend in March. All right, now, we're going to do what we normally do with these shows. We're going to have an open mic up here so that anyone from the folks that are attending here, the kind folks with us, can come up and join us whenever they would like. But there's one person in particular I'm going to call up for our first topic because I need him to discuss that topic. But I did want to give a shout out. I know we got several podcasts with us. Five of them actually came down to the recording. So I want to give a shout out to the five podcasts that are down here with us right now. And if six or seven, as I know at least two more have joined us, we'll add you guys in. First off, we got the boys from Kicked in the Dice Bags, both editions down here. Claire's Edition. The only people that are putting out great radio without public funding, RPPR, Role Playing Public Radio. The second show in the Fear the Boot Network, Postcards from the Dungeon. The website where even its host cannot remember the address, Gaming Asylum. And Dr. Mikey Mason, the maestro of the malt from the Good Beer Show.
Seriously, just say maestro of the malt with a straight face.
It was the quickest alliteration I could come up with right there.
Good, that's actually not bad.
If I'd rehearsed
it's
it?
It's awful.
Okay.
No, it's awful.
Fine.
I like a little
fine, bit. I quit.
Fear the Boot, official fine. Opinion is both that it was awesome and bad.
And join me today is the f***tard of Fear the Boot.
It's okay, it's going to get beeped out.
Yeah, it will be. So, challenge my alliteration, will you? All right, so the guy I'm bringing up here, this is Bob Arons. This is was Martian Bob after his great libation-providing nature came forth at a few Gen Cons. We swapped his handle to Martian God in honor of his vast decency. But what I brought him up here to talk about is, Bob, you have a PhD, which basically boils down to it's in artificial intelligence specializing on freeform language interactions with a computer. Is that more or less correct?
Close enough.
Okay, I know there's a whole lot of additional words that go into that, but for this year, you decided to run a game that no human being but you should run, which is an RPG based on Gene Ray's Time Cube. If you're really looking to have your mind blown, go to timecube.com. You will not believe what you're reading there, and I can't repeat most of what's said there.
I can.
And you did.
Yes, I did.
And since no one can get inside of the head of Gene Ray, you put technology to the task. And would you like to tell us about what came out of that?
What came out of it was basically an AI chatbot
trained on Gene Ray's writing on Time Cube. So you talk to this chatbot, and it talks back to you as Time Cube. It gets a little creepier, though, because it actually learns from what you're saying to it. So, for example, as I was talking with this AI saying things like, how many scenes should be in this playtest? It learned the word playtest. So later on, I asked it just a different question, and it brought up the playtest in its response.
Have you talked it out of Time Cube yet?
No, that's not going to happen.
Okay, that's not going to happen. All right. So how did this figure, you gave a little bit there, but can you talk about how this figured into the way you wrote your game?
Well, so obviously I can't just have this thing generate paragraphs and paragraphs of Time Cube because it would be about as comprehensible as Time Cube. Honestly, it would probably be less comprehensible than Time Cube because it doesn't have any rules for grammar. Gene Ray has a few rules for grammar.
He just occasionally changed font size or color, if we'll count that as grammar.
You know, I actually thought about
this
programming
is
that
green part of speech. Yeah.
I actually thought about programming that in, changing color and font size.
Okay, but so what did it do? Did it just kind of give clues? I mean, what? How did you use it?
Well, the way that I used it was I would ask it questions, I would just talk to it, and I would try to interpret its responses in making a scene, in providing overall structure. One of the things that Gene Ray goes on and on, is that we are all educated stupid. And I went through previous versions of his website via archive.org, and it turns out that he used to be even more hateful of teachers, saying things, for example, like, it is not immoral to kill evil-ass educators who deny the truth of Time Cube. That's not in the current
right.
iteration. But so I asked it a few questions about what the game should be about, what the flow should be like, and it kept coming back with a few ideas, including killing evil-ass educators, the idea of a word virus, and then, of course, the standard stuff about Earth has a simultaneous four-corner harmonic Time Cube.
To tell a story now about how it helped me, I got slammed by work the Thursday before. I had the whole day set aside. All I had to do was pick up Ruben. I see down here somewhere. He's got to be somewhere. No? Okay, Ruben's not down here. All right, well, I picked up Ruben from the airport. Thanks, buddy. Show up for me here. I get Ruben from the airport, and I had the rest of the day set aside to get stuff finished for the con. And then with work, there was something I told them not to do, and they decided to do it anyway, and I was on the phone all day with them. Won't bore you with that story. But so I come in, stressing because my Transformers game isn't quite ready to go, and Bob says, would you like my AI to finish writing it? So I'm like, let's see how Time Cube's going to do with Transformers. And so I went down there and basically said, he's like, where are you stuck? And I said, well, I don't know how this should happen. So he would type in, what types of things could cause them to have problems? And it would give me a response. And it's very much like a Rorschach test. It's an ink blot. It's not per se that it tells you, oh, have the CIA chase them. But it will say things like, you know,
Greenwich Mean Time is evil.
Yes. And so I'll say, aha, NATO's involved.
I don't know what was more disturbing, the Time Cube's answers or how Dan was interpreting them. Because I was watching this thing and not sure, is this the most awesome thing I've ever seen? Or is this a train wreck?
Oh, no.
And the answer is yes to both.
Sir, no. No, sir. It is the most awesome thing ever, and I'm going to tell you how. So, mind you, he's been teaching Time Cube about Time Cube. I briefly use it for Transformers game. But Chris Mace comes downstairs. For anyone who has never met Chris Mace, I'm going to state a simple and obvious fact, which is this gentleman is black, okay?
What? Really? You lied!
All right, so he is running a game that only he has the moral authority to do, which is he's running a Blaxploitation game, which is a sequel to the Blaxploitation game he ran last year. So he comes downstairs and sits with Bob and I, and I was kind of trying to keep my notes off the side because Chris is in at least one of my Transformers games. I can't remember both or not, but at least one of them. And I said, you got to try this thing out. Where are you at in your plot? He said, well, I'm kind of stuck up on this thing with pliers. And so we said, okay. We typed into something effect of what should happen with the pliers. Its response, I'm not making this up, was blame the white.
There was another one.
And I swear to you, I am not making it up. Chris, you got me on this. Bob, that is really what it said.
There was another one, too. He asked it, why do the Atlanteans want to take over Harlem? And it said, the Atlanteans don't want to know nothing.
Great. Time Cube is definitely
Yeah, if you've never been out to Gene Gray's side, he is incredibly racist. I'm just warning you straight up front. That's why I'm not repeating most of what he's it's about. All right, but the thing that I've conned you into next year, not that it took much work, was as I said, what I want to see at Fear the Con 5 is a ton of Church of Ronnie Traveler.
Hell
but in
yes.
addition to that,
Powered by Time.
But in addition to that, I said, Bob, here's what I would love to see you do. I want you to take this AI and over the next year work with it on a different set of thinking. And I want you to run a paranoia game where you are game mastering. There are four or five players. The computer sits at its own chair and plays friend computer.
Oh, God.
So whenever someone says, I am saying such and such to friend computer, you will type into the AI, and it's not running the game, but that is what friend computer replies with.
Absolutely.
And may indeed you discern this means you're going to die.
Absolutely. And the thing is, given enough time to prep this, because I decided to do the TimeCube thing on a lark when you guys talked about TimeCube, because I had been planning on designing a TimeCube AI for years, and I just never had a reason.
Don't raise your hand, sir. Raise your butt. Come on over here. If you've got a question, if any of you have a question, comment, you want to get on this, don't raise your hand. Just get up here, get in line, and so we know.
Are you bringing me a grilled cheese?
All right. So, first of all, go ahead and introduce yourself, and then ask, make your question or comment.
Yeah, I'm a Goat Unit, and I was going to say that that sounds like a lot of fun, but is it really a good idea to build an actual AI with friendly computers?
No, and that's why we're doing it.
Who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket?
No. The question is for a comedy game. It's wonderful. If the TimeCube AI eventually does become our overlord, I apologize now.
If I could actually address this,
yeah.
Movie producers are easily the computer scientist's worst enemy.
Yes.
Because everything that a computer scientist ever does always destroys the Earth somehow. Now, here's the way to make it foolproof: a robot to not be able to kill humanity. Don't let it walk.
Derek Knudsen, you've not read Harlan Ellison's I Have No Mouth and Must Scream. The computer could not move, yet it
Nobody
destroyed.
Nobody reads Harlan Ellison.
Well, I do.
Yeah. Step up, Bob.
He's an angry little troll.
I actually have read that, and I was using that more as a metaphor. If you don't want something to do something, don't let it do it. if they talk about, for example, they got robots in Japan that are going to help elderly people get out of their beds and stuff like that, and they're big in plastic. And they look all they look all happy and stuff. And you know what they didn't give these things? Crushing hands. They have paddles. They have paddles that lift people out of the bed.
Let me ask you.
Can't get. Nope. They can't get through the door.
Let me ask you. Yes, I guess I could four-finger bitch slap you. let me ask you a question, just because there may be people either here or at home who are wondering the same thing, so I'd like to go ahead and bring it up. What about the whole ghost in the machine thing? The idea that if you create enough complex processes, the sum of them together create an emergent property that you didn't see coming.
Oh, absolutely. That happens all the time. That happened with the AI that we were using.
For example, blame the white people for the problems in our
and even more than that, the fact that you were...
Could have blamed me enough to actually kill me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, remember what happened when you were saying, how does this Transformer help these guys out?
Right.
And Time gives a response. And then later, it brings up that Transformer again.
Yes, it did.
And it does that because of the context it knows, and it is able to mathematically bring that in. So it appears...
But learning words is different than learning function.
It is, exactly. And furthermore, when you're talking about the ability for AI to learn new things that you didn't teach it,
right,
it's only as good as the way you taught it to learn.
Right.
And if you're afraid of something learning more than it ought to, or learning things, or potentially being dangerous in any way, all you have to do is unhook it from the internet. Don't give it wheels. Don't give it a gun.
Let me ask you to conjecture on something.
Wait a minute. If I can't give it wheels, if I can't give it a gun, if I can't hook it up to Wikipedia, why the hell am I building it? Next you're going to tell me to make it to where it can't make grilled cheese and serve me a beer? What's the point?
I'm just saying.
Because you want robots to replace what we all do, and we don't do any of that stuff. We sit around in front of a mic.
Let me ask you to speculate on something. I'm going to say it for this is speculation, because one of the words I'm going to use, quite frankly, there's something of a struggle to define. Do you believe that consciousness is simply the outcropping or an emergent property of complexity, meaning if you simply make a machine complex enough, it wakes up. I personally don't buy it. I'm curious what your take on it is.
I think that's a blasphemy against my great lord Zarathustra. I honestly...
Well, I must also Shrek, so...
There you go.
Well, please tell me somebody
you're
got
Shrekking right now.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is that whatever makes consciousness, I don't think that we right now have the capacity to emulate any meaningful way for that consciousness to express itself mechanically or electronically. That doesn't mean that it won't happen, but it's sort of like the AI that I used won something called the Loebner Prize in 1998. And the Loebner Prize is a competition that attempts to recreate the classic, if you can't tell if the chatbot is a human or an AI, that it's called the Turing test. Is it intelligent? Two things. Every time someone gets closer, people say, well, that's not AI, and they move the goalpost. And the second thing is, it's like, imagine if 1912 there were a competition to try to get to the moon. Before modern rocketry had been invented, people would be building bigger and better cannons. And not a one of them would get you to the moon. But you'd say, wow, we're making progress because we're shooting monkeys higher and higher into the stratosphere.
Sounds like progress to me.
But the thing is, the core technology to get to the moon, nothing like what we were trying. And I think that's where we are right now. There needs to be some quantum leap that we have not yet thought of that will allow us to get there. Because I can tell you, mathematically, we can emulate the storage capacity of a brain. We can emulate the functioning of the brain. We can emulate all sorts of things that the brain can do. But the one thing that we can't make computer do is act in ways that brains will act that we cannot predict.
Step up, introduce yourself, and go
for it. My mind is totally blown. Yes, and I'm Church. Apparently, I'm running Traveler at FearTheCon 5. Bob, just let me know when your slot is that you're going to be running this, so that way people won't sign up for my Traveler game and I won't have to run it.
I fully plan on scheduling my game and then unscheduling it suddenly, just so that everyone else plays yours.
Yeah, no response to that one.
Okay.
I'm Seneca. First, don't ever trust Whitey. I have a question for Bob. The way that this has been used, I wonder how, if it's practical to feed it, say, a large amount of fantasy text or sci-fi text, just a lot of books, and then just to start talking to it and make it create your game.
And then make it the DM. I was thinking the same thing.
That's absolutely possible. It's absolutely doable. The problem is that you're going to run into is there's a difference between conversing with someone and writing a book, right? I'm speaking in sentences that are fairly short. I'm using a fairly limited vocabulary. I'm using the word I a lot. Conversation is not the same as text. And that's one of the reasons why when you actually make an actual chatbot that you're trying to use to win the Loebner Prize or something like that, you don't use historical text that is written in prose. You use, for example, a gajillion I am conversations. My personal favorite Loebner Prize winner, basically, it's just interaction on the internet. It's people talking to each other on the internet. It has a gigantic database of it, and it just basically uses fancy math to pull stuff out of that.
Wow. So they have used the best of our technology to reach the lowest of human existence. So somebody spent whatever
that
to build 4chan.
Walmart at the time here.
Actually, I have actually been thinking about training up a chatbot on 4chan.
I want you to do it. I want you to leave it logged in, and I want you to tell us alone what its username is. So we can watch hilarity ensue.
Absolutely. So getting back to the actual question, you absolutely could throw a bunch of fantasy text in there, and there was actually a version of the TimeCube AI that I had that I threw an equal number of lines of Lovecraft in there. Oh. But here's the thing. It was not nearly as good as you'd want it to be. Because what it would come back with is something like, you dumbass, queer god oneism, the eldritch horrors of Obama's presidency.
That sounds like every Cthulhu game I've ever run.
But it's not this awesome fusion you want it to be. One of the first things I did was I threw Alice in Wonderland, Marx and Engels' Communist Manifesto, and Henry Ford's famous racist screed, The Eternal Jew, in there. Because I thought I was going to be talking with, some kind of crazy absinthe racist commie. And that's not what happened at all. It was this florid Victorian.
He was actually quite nice and liked children.
No, but that's the thing. It wasn't any fun. It wasn't any fun at all because it replied in huge sentences. There's no back and forth there.
I have several Jewish friends.
The best thing out of it, though, was it created the Pat soundboard, so we were set.
So if you wanted to actually have a program generate your game for you like that, what you would want to do is decide, is this thing giving me content or is this thing assisting me?
Right.
If you want to give you content, what you'll have to do is you'll have to give it a paragraph. It'll give you a paragraph back. If all you want is some crazy thing to bounce ideas off of, then you need something that is a little closer to, for example, interviews with fantasy authors. That would be a much better AI to just bounce ideas off of.
Hi, I'm Zanian Zero. Not big of a horror game fan, but I had the most horrific incident ever happen last night's game.
Was Pat your GM?
No. but I did hear he was GMing Fatal at FearTheCon 5, so.
Yeah, anyway. I'm gonna find out what that actually is. So.
It might even be a LARP. We don't know.
It will be, yeah.
Yes. But Bob was there. He's typing a question in the time cube bot. It responds. He looks at it. Yeah, that makes sense. So this is so much a comment as an intervention, sir. You need to put that bot down. It needs to please work on the psycho computer from Paranoia. You'll thank us.
I'm Charles, aka Mirage, and I for one welcome our computer overlords and throw me a sex bot or something, and we'll call it even.
Bob, before this recording's over, can you get the thing up and running? I want to hear what it has to say in response to I welcome our new computer overlords.
I also look forward to hear what that has to say. See you later.
Thank you. Yes. Goat Unit again. I wanted to ask a more serious question.
Sure.
Have you read any Douglas Hofstadter? Okay.
Bob is nodding for those of you at home. This is because when Pat nods. Go on.
Okay. And I was wondering, you know, he makes the argument about a really sophisticated machine that is in some children's museum about a laser pointer that avoids being caught and people chase around the room. And he makes the argument that it's actually more conscious than like a mosquito. And I was wondering what you thought about that.
I don't think I'm familiar with that exact one. I don't have a degree in psychology, so I don't really feel like I can speak about the biological consciousness side of that. But I can say that, you know, talking about consciousness in any kind of purely subjective sense is kind of meaningless because, and this goes with that, you know, moving the goalposts problem with AI.
Right.
Because people see Watson for posterity, the computer that beat Ken Jennings and the other guy on Jeopardy. And people see that and they're like, well, that's not really AI. And the reason they say that is because I couldn't ask Watson what the weather's like. But what does that really mean? So when you say it's more conscious, it's less conscious, well, in what way?
Yeah.
I mean, for all we know, mosquitoes have the most vibrant dreams of any animal alive. Who knows? It's one of those things where you can define certain areas and we're going to say, all right, we've got a bar set here. And I'm going to say that if it breaks that, if it reaches that bar, then we'll call it conscious. But we can only call it conscious in terms of where that bar is and what that bar is about. One of my favorite examples of a question and answer system, which is what Watson is, the question is asked of the system. This was several years ago. This wasn't Watson. When did the Berlin Wall fall? And it said Tuesday. It wasn't wrong. The Berlin, or maybe it was Thursday, one of the two. And because it had gone through its document, you know, the documents it had, and it found the news clipping from the day that the Berlin Wall fell. And the first sentence was, on Tuesday, the Berlin Wall fell, you know, ending decades of oppression of the East German people. Well, it did fall on Tuesday. But, you know, you have to start asking questions like, well, is the year enough? Is the date enough? Is the year and date necessary? And it gets into all these, you know, fine, nitty-gritty things.
Social context.
Well, exactly. And what if I say, but social context doesn't matter? And then what if I say social context is the only thing that matters?
Right.
What happens if I have a computer that knows what love is, but at the same time is unable to, understand what love between two people is?
Right.
Does it have emotions? I don't know. Frankly, I don't care.
Have that computer talk to Foreigner if they want to know what love is.
They don't seem to know either. So
I don't know. That's why they need to talk to them, kind of let them know. Figure it out.
They do seem to have a work order out on that, though. They've, for, yeah.
I've got actually a question about practical uses. Do you think this technology can be used in helping with decision making, such as I'll go somewhere far out, like doctors trying to determine what the best course of treatment would be? And you can talk with a computer that's been loaded with medical journals and so forth and bounce ideas off of it. It's going into the realm of creativity, per se, for this. I'm just curious as to your thoughts on that.
Or is it just going to tell you the problems of oneness queered you in your system somewhere?
I can answer that question definitively. We're already doing it.
Okay.
My company, the company that I work for, Nuance Communications, is actually involved with IBM. I'm actually working with an IBM group right now on a different project. As soon as this project gets done, I will be working with them on exactly that.
Wow. Half the room is clapping and half the room is horrified. So the
half the room is like RPGs.
So I know. I know exactly why half of the room is horrified, because they're afraid that there's going to be a computer telling them who lives and who dies, and that is not how this will be used. Imagine, if you will, an emergency room where you go in and it's packed because there's been some kind of horrific accident or something, or an earthquake, anything like that has happened, and the triage staff, they have no way of stemming the tide, no way to deal with all the people coming in. Imagine that there is a computer at the front that always makes a decision where, like, if it's 10% terrible, 90% okay, it always says, you know what, this could be terrible, and we're going to classify you as someone who needs medical attention right away. But imagine that computer is there to say, all right, you've got a boo-boo, you go over here. You've got something terrible. You go over here. You've got a boo-boo. You go over here. Imagine how much more efficiently that could help doctors work. Or imagine if you've got a group, like a panel of three doctors.
Right.
And then the fourth doctor is this computer. The three doctors say, I concur. The fourth doctor, you know, this computer says, I don't know. It might be lupus.
It's never lupus.
Unless it is.
So, okay, the real moral story I got there is always lie about chest pain.
Yeah. Vomiting works, too.
What?
Vomiting works.
Well, vomiting works, too. Yeah, because I don't want to move you if nothing else.
This is Trigger Happy 938. Yes, that Trigger Happy 938. I have a question. Based on your experience building these AIs, what do you feel the result would be if we took transcripts of all of Fear the Boot and entered it into an AI?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think the result would be me starting a new podcast that would sync this one. Honestly, it would probably be a lot of fun to talk to, but I wouldn't expect a whole lot of interesting content out of it. It would only be rehab.
I gotta say,
Pat has approached the microphone.
So, oh my God! Wait.
So you're saying it's kind of like listening to one of his chat extras.
Come on, Pat, use your human.
So you're saying it's kind of like listening to one of Chad's chat extras anyway. So
pretty much.
Yeah. More specifically, nothing new will come out of it. It will have nothing new to say.
Well, he just repeats himself over and over anyway. Yeah,
it is a Chad story.
Yeah. We have
same. Different day.
See, we have lots new to say. We just don't have any new examples to give of the things we're talking about.
It'll start talking about an autographed copy of Riffs that it has.
Hey, you know, I got one of those.
What? You do?
My name's Vern, Junkerman Vern on the forums. In CGI, there's the uncanny valley as things approach looking like human. Is there anything like that when it comes to interactions with AI?
You actually have the exact same thing happen where people start to get really freaked out and uncomfortable with the computer.
A quick explanation. What is the uncanny valley?
So the uncanny valley is this place where, as, for example, a human face becomes more and more human, if you start off as something that doesn't look human at all, it's just a bunch of polygons, and it's talking to you. And as these polygons resolve closer and closer to what a human face actually looks like, people get more and more comfortable with it. Until it gets to a point that exists right about Final Fantasy XII. where people are looking at this, and it's so close to human, but just a little bit off.
And it just creeps you out.
It creeps you way out. And the current thinking is that it may be some kind of built-in thing that all mammals have, because other animals, for example, don't have to deal with things like rabies. But if you've got something that looks like it's acting normal-ish, but just a little off, you're probably better, evolutionarily speaking, getting the hell out of Dodge.
Right. That point kind of brings up something I've been thinking about for the last 10 or 15 minutes while we were talking about this. And it's, I keep going back to the point of all this AI stuff is really cool. It's fantastic. I'm as a scientist, you know, minded person, I embrace that kind of thing. But we're talking about gaming and getting back to gaming. And I want to know from all of you guys, do you guys want to play a game that's written by a computer, or do you want to play a game that is written by the creativity of another human being? And I vote human being all the time, because as cool as this is,
run, you bastard.
It's the creativity of my fellow people that I think are going to come up with the true shit.
I'll take response on that one.
Okay.
With like my Transformers game. It did not write the game for me, but what it did do is give me these ink blot type statements that basically got my juices flowing and got my own creativity moving, because just from anxiety of being at the last minute, I had locked up.
And that's fine, but the topic that we evolved into was
right.
Really talking about AIs writing games, writing the content, writing what was in there, not just providing some background information or like anything like that. I mean, we progressed to the point of, you know, saying we're going to have a fully functional, conscious AI that would do this.
I'm going to answer your question with a question. Let's say
I love people that do that.
Oh,
Chad.
So let's say that I have written an AI and I've spent a lot of time tweaking it, training it, working with it back and forth till it's just the way I want it. I've made this thing that produces other things. Just because the AI produced that other thing, I made that AI. Isn't that itself a work of creativity? Why is what derives out of that thing not my work of creativity as well through the agency of this AI?
I see your point, but I think you're splitting hairs. Yes, you were the creator. But in what it continues to go on to make is not newly creative. It is something of you.
Pat, I would argue if you play the game and you enjoy the game, why does it matter? Why do you need to draw that line? If the story is good and you enjoy the game and it turned out great, why does it matter if it was Bob or his AI that wrote it?
There's actually games that already kind of do this on some level. For example, one of the things that Bethesda's been messaging with to some success in the Elder Scrolls series is emergent gameplay, where there are certain events and plot points that are scripted, but some of the things that go on about the town and occur around you are being determined by the game itself on the fly, and the producers did not expect it to happen.
Yeah, it's like playing a Chad game.
Yeah. Well, there's actually, I can't remember the details on this. I may get the exact stuff all wrong, but when Bethesda was first messing with the engine for Oblivion, they had something occur where, like, I'm trying to remember what the details were, but like a guy walked into a room.
No, it was an old lady with a cat.
Wait, what was the story? There's an old lady with a cat. There's
an old lady with a cat, and basically the old lady was trying to do X, and then the kid, this has been a long time since I read this, and then she had a cat there, and the cat and the lady were on like a separate AI, and so the cat had like a need of some kind, and the cat would go over to the lady. It would stop the old lady from doing what her goals and needs were. And so they would kind of get in this loop, and then
raised her anger level.
Which raised her anger level, and then the old lady was a magic user with, you know, she had these powers, right? And she bzzzed her own cat, and thus eliminating the problem and allowed her to go on with this. And the guys were watching us because they expected the old grandma lady, yeah, we'll make her a magic user because everybody's a magic user in this realm, and she's got a cat. No, look, this happy little domestic. Oh my God, she just fried her cat.
That sounds like a Gygax module I went through once.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Silver Seraph on the forums. I just kind of going off the comment about creativity and isn't me creating the AI. Couldn't the problem be that if it's not me creating the AI, it's you creating the AI? And if everyone is using your AI, doesn't that mean that a lot of the games would continue to be the same, and it wouldn't be creativity, it would be stagnation?
I feel the exact same way about pre-written modules.
So that's actually a really great point. And the question comes down to, when I make this AI, you know, there are lots of different ways to define what an artificial intelligence is, what a learning system is, what all of this stuff is. Let's say I want to make Game Creator AI 5000. What I could do is I could release an engine that wasn't trained on anything, and you train the engine. There's no content in there. All it knows is how to, for example, take a place, some protagonists and some antagonists, and then arrange them with, you know, whatever flowery scenery I give it as background, and then it writes it for me. That sort of engine wouldn't have any of its own content. You would give it all the content. All I would do is give it the tools. You know, I'm giving you the toolbox. I'm not building you the dresser. On the other hand, if I did give you, for example, a pre-trained up AI, but I allowed you to interact with it, and I gave it, for example, a learning curve that said, in the beginning, when you have a new owner, you, AI, are going to learn lots and lots and lots. Everything this person does, you're going to grab onto it like a, you know, like a starving man on a biscuit. But as time goes on, learn a little less and start asserting yourself more. If I just give you an engine, it's all you. All I'm doing is giving you tools. If, however, it's that second thing, then it becomes a sort of a melding of what I put in there and what you put in there.
Hey, Go Unit again. This is the last time I'll come up, I promise. But so, yeah, Pat, you pointed out that you'd rather play a game made by a human than by an AI. But I think at the point where the human ceases to be responsible for the creation, the AI has achieved personhood to some degree. There's no point at which it's not being created by a person. Like, if a star supernovas, that's not art. If a person photographs it, that's art. So if creation is taking place of any kind, there's some personage responsible for that creation.
But if a supernova in the woods, does anybody hear it?
Only the Pope.
Yes, not in that solar system, no.
I'm Nifty Juby off of the forums. And if it's talking about like using the engine to create another game, how would that go into marketing with like the royalties? Because you're the one who made the engine. Because of your work, it would be transferring into every game that other people are making. So would you be collecting all this money off of one engine, or how exactly would that
work? You've raised an interesting question, because certainly you can license the AI, but is what it creates also your property? And actually, and
or does the AI own it, and is the AI one AI is 10%?
Well, and I'll let Bob speak to this. No,
it's like the episode of Voyager where the doctor writes a novel.
Well, actually, all jokes aside, there's actually, I believe, a serious issue with this that came up at one point. The question is, does Microsoft own everything that was written in MS Word? Now, that's a really stripped down version of this problem, but I see exactly what you're saying, Bob. I know you're not a lawyer, but you're at least, you know, working in this science. Has any of this come up? That is the AI itself licensed? And if the AI creates, who owns it?
The quick answer is I only use free software and I only distribute free software. So that's someone else's problem.
This is Church again. And I'm actually in the simulation and game design program for my college. And that's one thing we went over last semester, was that even though somebody has made an engine, like a video game engine, the Unreal Engine, for example, Epic Games, who developed it, they get so much out of it, but they don't get actual royalties for it. You just pay a certain amount to earn the engine to actually get to distribute it.
Right.
And then you move on and make your stuff, and Unreal or Epic Games doesn't get anything else out of it. You just pay for the initial engine use. So that's how it goes with the video game standpoint. But as with the, well, with the video games, it's just a tool.
Exactly. It's just a tool. It's not self-creating.
In this case, it's not self-creating, but the same concept can apply, because you're just making the tool. The tool can make other tools, but it itself is only a tool.
This is going to be interesting. I want to see play out. That is a very good question, though.
I'm going to be like a robot's lawyer one day. That's going to be awesome.
It's like my robot. That's really the goal, isn't it? Step, I mean, of all nerd lawyers, yeah. Or to be a robot yourself that is a lawyer?
We have to engage a Canadian translator here before we start.
I think you'll make it. Hi, Ray Dixon here. I guess you can call me Mr. Ninja if you like.
Mr. Lime.
I have to say, sir, you are a very cool human being. And I say that because
he is.
I say that because my parents at Lime Wielding Ninja's age would not have taken me across international borders to go to a gaming convention. Just would not have happened.
I'll go ahead and include that your wife is a pretty cool person too, because you know she's part of the family as well.
Yep. And you introduced me to the game of Munchkin, which I'd actually never played before.
Whoa. Okay. Whoa. Oh, and we like Lime, we like Lime as well.
So actually, I'm curious, before you ask your question, just because I know I've seen several, how many people here, raise your hand if you are here with your kid or have brought your kid to this convention? So we've got Arlen, Trish, but my own parents don't realize their kid's here.
It's slot six. Do you know where your children are?
All right, so I know Arlen, so we got, then yeah, you, so okay, all right.
We better be careful.
Say goodness gracious, you don't really.
We better be careful. If this keeps happening, Pat might not be able to keep coming. How does 30 feet go with floors? I mean,
six squares.
Six. Yeah.
I have no idea what I do. So, okay. Yes, sir, what is your question or comment?
Returning to the topic of AI and so on, at what point does training an AI differ from raising a child?
And
for example, I do not own.
That's fine, Jay. He thinks you're a robot.
Okay. For example,
you're now lime wielding AI.
Do you have?
Yes.
Do you have something you need to reveal to lime? Now, I mean, it's cool.
No, but
I mean, she's trouble. We can get Bob's program for you. No, there are agencies here in the States that will take her. So I just,
we're not having that kind of problem. What I am saying is,
right.
If the thing is doing something honestly creative, as opposed to simply offering interesting Rorschach inkblot suggestions,
yes.
Then at what point do we have to start considering it as separate from its creator? Like, as I say, I think about this thing occasionally. Like, I do not own the rights to whatever Jenny may create or whatever Jenny may do.
And obviously, there are a ton of ethical and metaphysical questions that are lodged into that question.
Yes. But just thinking about this from the viewpoint of David Gerald, When Harley Was One, I think is the name of the novel.
I can't really speak to a lot of it because, like I said, I don't have a degree in psychology. I don't know a whole lot of theory of mind. But I can tell you exactly the point at which training an AI differs from raising a child. When the AI can tell you it hates you and that you're a bad daddy.
Well, you said yourself that you have it learning less from you and exerting itself more. And I said that I thought immediately, yes, and then eventually you'll have it go through the period of time where you are stupid and you know nothing. Yeah. And then eventually it'll wise up a little bit and say, oh, my God, Bob does know things.
Your Gene Ray AI did sass me quite a bit, I'm going to have to say.
I did. We asked it a question. It said something stupid. We said no, and it started yelling at us.
And I got to say, if that was a kid, I would have slapped its pants right back forward. That's all.
Actually, Dan, I want to, in the interest of time here and everything, we're getting closer to the start of slot five, and before the segue that Mr. Lime actually presented us being from Canada. Trisha?
Mr. Ninja?
Yeah. All right. But Trisha, you want to come up here?
That's the look of no, I don't.
Yeah, actually, no, she does. She truly does.
We're dragging Trisha up because there's people from Canada here?
Him being from Canada kind of makes this actually relevant, and this is actually for Dan, so go ahead, Trisha, come on up here and... those of you who are not visually watching this podcast, which is pretty much almost everybody in the listening crowd here, but go ahead, Trisha.
Trisha Land from Michigan. It's my second year coming to this convention. One of the things is we know how much time you have put into this. We know how many friendships we have gotten from this to the point we have traveled the country meeting our friends again. So what we wanted to do is do something for your podcast room. It's mainly for you, but it is for the whole crew. So what we did is we have come up with a map to show where everyone has traveled from to come to this convention.
Oh my God.
Come on, Alaska, get your act together.
Yeah, what the shit, North Dakota?
Yeah, I
there's no Hooter in thousands of miles.
I say, I don't know what to say except holy on two regards. One, first of all, thank you guys very much for putting this together, because I'll tell you right now, and Carl can vouch to this, that if you look through my house at the things that I keep from this show, if you look through the china cabinet that we have at the front of the house, the things that are in there are the things like boots, the custom-made My Little Pony that was sent to me. It was the first custom-engraved die with a Fear the Boot logo that anyone ever sent to us. Unicron's my own. I'm talking about things I got from other people.
I've got the engraved host glass that I drink from all the time at home, and that's...
So do I.
Just like the one Chad told you right there.
We have a brand wizard, any?
This was something that is going to pretty quickly end up on the wall. Because I'll tell you right now, I recognize just life being what it is, nothing lasts forever, okay? That's just a reality we live in. There will be a last episode of Fear the Boot. I hope it's 20 years from now, but there will be a last episode of Fear the Boot. But when someday I'm sitting there, 80 years old, getting moved into the home, and I'm digging through my stuff, trying to figure out what to garage sale and what to keep, these are the types of things that are going to take me to tears.
You're not coming to my house.
Because, because this is what reminds me, what Chad was talking about before recording, that we're not talking to microphones, that we are talking to people. And that more than that, you guys are talking to each other. For those of you here last year, it was a really powerful moment where a guy came in here who'd been struggling with a lot of stuff, was brave enough to take his first trip out of the state ever, did it alone to come to Fear the Con. I was in tears because he could not believe his first time venturing out among strangers, how well he was treated. You know what that says about me? Nothing. You know what that says about you guys? Everything. And I'm dead serious about this. I like Robin Laws. I'm on his private industry mailing list. I have his award. It's not hanging up. Because, and I don't say this as any way as a slight to Drake, who's the great guy who recommended us for that award. I love Drake. I've got stuff from my trip to Icon that remind me of Drake and remind me of what a good guy he is. Drake is an awesome guy. He means a lot to me. I hope you got to New York again someday to hang out with Chris Mace, to hang out with him, to maybe get down to D.C. to see Jeff. But this is the type of thing that it's every time I'm like, why the hell do we keep doing this? You know, this is why. And you guys, really, you're awesome. Not to us. You are awesome to us, but you're awesome to each other. And I mean, you guys have a lot to be proud of. I mean, we look at the charities we've done. We look at Cybergs, the people there. They stopped me. I have never talked to them in a previous year. I didn't even know the staff remembered us. To say, would you guys think about doing one of these in the summer because you're the group we like working with? And I'm like, what? You know, that's why they opened the other room for us. Because they've come to love this crowd that much. I'm not a crowd. These guys are not a crowd. You guys are that crowd. You know, and I hope, at least in some small ways, your lives have been made a little bit brighter by the nonsense that we put out. So
we love you guys!
We're running up against time. I need to get everyone out of here for the next slot. So I'll take the three of you that are standing up, but let's try to keep this a little bit quick. So
I'm sorry. I do want to riff a little bit about that because I do live in Indianapolis where Gen Con is held. And after the con, I go to the different restaurants around there. They say that the gamers that are there are the best people that they've seen. And we've got several conventions in there that is held in that city. And they say that they like us the best. So
yes, sir. I will agree with you. Gamers are one of the most wildly misunderstood and underestimated segments of society.
Absolutely.
Plain and simple. Yeah, actually, the cops know that. We had another person who was let off by the cops because they said they were going to Fear the Con. I don't know what it is the cops... This is not the first person. I don't know what it is. So if you get pulled over, say, I'm coming from Fear the Con, it actually might work.
David Gray, you are a dangerous, dangerous man. And we've got our eye on you, sir. So do St. Louis's finest. So just watch it.
Pat, you brought up a point about the AI writing these adventures or games. I have a similar concern in that even with the silly games, it seems like it's these role-playing games, these stories are about the human condition. I'm getting really hippie, so Chad, I'm going on your wavelength then. So even the silly games like Traveler or the Time Cube that started this whole thing.
Traveler's serious business.
Yeah, right. is because you guys bring it up on the show, it's a connection that is made, even though it's a silly comedy sort of thing. So even to the serious games, it's all about the...
Yeah, paranoia is funny because it's about hypocrisy and futility.
Right.
That's the fundamental principle of paranoia. It's hypocrisy and futility.
But it's only snap because you got other people. I mean, there's a reason I'm not at home rating, you know, Molten Core right now. Mm. I'm gaming with people. And that's what's about.
And I just don't think that the AI can do that. It's not lived through the experiences, so...
I agree with you on that because just in thinking, if I were to read a book, if Of Mice and Men was written by a computer instead of John Steinbeck, and I knew that, I don't think I would enjoy it as much because, for me, part of that experience is the knowledge and the understanding that this came from somewhere. This was not just blink, he just got a silly little idea and wrote it down and it was a great book. That came from his life experiences. He lived this in some way, or he lived through it, he travailed through it, and that was what the blood, sweat, and tears came out on the page. That doesn't come from an AI. They don't blood, sweat, and tear, so. And there you go.
See, I can't get a goddamn word in edge.
No, I know.
This is what I put up with, people!
just saw like the birth of Neopat.
Okay, so all right, just we have a quick response. I'd like to get Adam and Cheesewedge up here.
Quick response. I have never laughed, cried, been excited reading a module. I have laughed, cried, gotten excited running a module and playing a module. That's my response.
And I read Earthshaker and cried.
It's what you put into it. It's what you put into it, the human. Yes, absolutely.
Dr. Hart.
Dr. Hart.
You're not a real doctor.
Never hear that again. But I'm Adam.
Turn that mic up towards you. There you go.
Hello. I'm Adam. You guys are to be congratulated. I think you've stumbled on something good here. So let's assume that the AI does own the content, the creative content it creates.
Okay.
Let's also assume it can draw some income from that. And it pays taxes. We've just solved the national deficit, people. Hey, now the problem is
your MacBook's lazy. That's apparently what the problem is.
How far do you take it? Do they vote?
Yeah, I would say that's the problem.
Marginal income tax on AI to 99.9.
Then the problem is,
yes, vote me out, bastard.
Yeah, they would be able to vote, and they would vote.
Yes.
Whereas we won't because we're too goddamn lazy to go to the polls.
All I'm saying is expect the NSA to drop
like
in any second.
It was the 2006 Ennies.
And they would vote the same way.
All right, well,
William
congratulations.
Gibson.
Good thought, Adam.
All right.
William Gibson's famous cyberpunk novel, Neuromancer, they have multiple AIs in it, and one of the AIs was able to attain citizenship in Switzerland.
Switzerland, though.
Yeah, that's just it. Now the other countries would give it to him. So.
All right.
But it's Switzerland.
Jason, step on up,
it's
sir.
It's where the banks are. That's
now
where
you're going to kneel to talk into that microphone.
Hi, Zombie Killer Cheese Wedge here. I came up here to stroke the Fear the Booters egos one more time. I'm impressed by the fact
put
that...
Put your pants on, Pat.
Well, then I'd have to put mine back on.
No, that's okay.
I love audio. Okay.
Don't kill our buzz,
There's
man.
There's no docking at Fear the Boot.
I'm going to leave this one alone. It's wrong.
Try again.
Right, so I'd like to stroke the phallic ego of Fear the Boot itself. I am impressed by the fact that there has been donations to the Tsunami Relief Fund.
Yes.
To so many other things in that area each year. To the fact that there's a poster of the United States and so much internal connection, so much community. And fruit.
And
Fear the as well. What does that go to?
Gateway Homeless Shelter in St. Louis.
Gateway Homeless Shelter. How much did we give them?
I'll be giving them just over $700.
$700, if for anyone who couldn't catch that.
And on a much less important note, thank you from Danger Brewery for helping us recuperate the losses for brewing beer just for you guys. Because we're giving that to you for free.
Yeah, man. More cider.
And cider.
No, just do like 9 barrels of cider next year.
We could do that.
Oh, yeah.
It is not cheap to brew that beer or cider, and you guys have basically paid for us to be here, and that's going to happen again for sure. But thank you for being so communal. So caring about each other, and thanks for caring about us. I think the other brewer wants to say something, too.
I have to just give a note. The Danger Brewery guys, Kazelle and Killer Cheese Weds, they do beer tastings around Fear the Con. It's not something we really promote. It's just something, well, I mean, we don't really talk about it. We partake. But it's something that spreads by word of mouth, and people show up, and they open their rooms up to anybody. Anybody who wants in and wants to taste some really good beer, these guys make their own beer. And I have to say, you guys are really good at making your own beer. I love your beer.
Okay, I really do need to close this out. So what I'm going to do is, Kazelle, since you walked up here, I'm going to give you the last word. However, I'm going to add an addendum to the show because, Bob, I want you to bring your computer down here, and I do want to hear what it has to say in response to us welcoming our new computer overlords. And if I have to, I'll add that on to the end of the show if we don't get it recorded before I shut this off. So, Kazelle, go ahead. You got the last word.
All right. I guess two quick things to tag on to what Killer Cheeseware said. We brew for fun. We brew so we can share it with people. We made tons of beer, and we did it knowing that it was all coming here and it was all coming for you guys, and it's because of that same human connection that you guys have been talking about all night. We do that so that we can get the feedback from you guys, so we can hear it from you, and so you guys can enjoy it. We love brewing it, but I'm way, way happier when I'm handing someone else my own beer and putting it in their hand.
Is Danger Brewery pretty local right now? I know there's some issues with distributing liquor across state lines. Do you have a website or something that people can check out?
Not yet. Not yet. Everything is still kind of baseline. We're just kind of doing it mostly word of mouth.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's...
There's a link to it on the gamer interface.
Post.aol.com/7932
Straight through me.
Yes.
On the forum. You can send your inquiries to Zeke Coprise on the forums.
Yeah.
Bob, do we have that ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay. We welcome our new computer overlords. What does it have to say in response to this?
Kill light.
Opposite sex cubes equate to 4-corner 24-hour days within one Earth rotation.
Words to live by.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2011. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.